south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Well, wouldn't you know it, still getting feedback about those three or four shows I did on mating, dating, and long-distance romance with Latino and Latina singles here in Latin America. Where else? Specifically, lovelorn gringos up in the States trying to hook up with Latin ladies using those Cupid Latina sites. For example, just got this email from Melissa. She says, Johnny, the number one top mistake first world men make when trying to figure out us women, whether it's us gringo women up north or Latinas, is to go to YouTube to watch videos that purportedly explain us women. You got that? Sounds logical, Melissa, but is it? All right, now for some late-breaking news out of Panama. You've heard me say many times before that Panama is no longer the nice, secret, under-the-radar tax haven it once was, not since the Panama Papers. I think that's like 2 years ago now. When it was discovered, actually, it was a whistleblower who put out the news that there were tens of thousands of shell SA corporations set up mostly by narcos, political scumbags, and some legitimate businessmen, too. And though it's always been legal to set up those under-the-radar SA corporations, what brought down the international heat on Panama was when they discovered that just one law firm in particular created 50,000 SA corporations. So naturally, there was a big stink around that. And it's why Panama is no longer the place for you to even think about hiding anything. Because the fact is, in Panama, nothing's secret anymore. Sound familiar? But you knew that already, right? However, this you didn't know. If you live, work, or do business in Panama, or are a Panamanian citizen, of course you have to pay taxes. Well, I'll take part of that back, because recent stats show that 30% of all Panamanian businesses are under the radar. That means strictly cash, no receipts, no reporting, no taxes. However, if you're the up-and-up gringo living in Panama, have a business on the books, and are paying taxes, and let's say the government does an audit of your business or someone blows the whistle on you and an audit finds that you've been a tax cheat. Well, guess what happens if you go to court and you're convicted? Well, as long as the amount that you've cheated out of the Panamanian government is under $300,000. Yep, I said dollars. You know, Panama uses U.S. dollars. Anyway, you know what happens to you 99.9% of the time? Nothing. You just got to pay it back. But nothing happens to you personally. You don't get locked up. And if you can't pay the whole thing back, they'll put you on a nice long payment plan. As long as you pay something every month, you'll be all right. But get this, if you've cheated the Panamanian government out of more than $300,000, tisk tisk, then it's a felony and you're supposed to do time. However, isn't it funny? No one's actually gone to jail yet. That you gotta love, huh? Hey, I hope you're getting this. Think about it. You don't go to jail in Panama unless you've screwed the government out of more than 300 grand in taxes. And then still, even though you're supposed to, you don't go to jail. At least there's no reports of that yet. So why is that? Well, Panama, like every other Latin country, does not have a strong-arm type IRS like they have up in the States. They don't have their version of FBI or IRS SWAT teams to batter down your doors. And they'll never show up at your personal residence, haul you and your family and the maid out on the front lawn while they go in and collect your computers, your files, and archives. In fact, as I was talking to one guy I know in Panama, he said he has a friend who's getting investigated right now. He's a guy running one of those internet gambling sites, and they funnel millions a month through those places. Well, he's been notified that he's got to go to tax court, and guess when his court date is? In February. That means he's got 4 months to get his feces together or just leave the country. That also means he's got 4 months to shift his assets and money out of the country, too. So are you getting this? Are you reading between the lines? But back to the fact that the latest new tax evasion law, stemming out of the Panama Papers fiasco, as mentioned, if you screw the Panama government out of more than 300 grand, it's a felony and you're supposed to go to jail. Well, guess what? Business owners in Panama are all pissed off about that law. In fact, just this week, the Panama Chamber of Commerce and Panama Board of Industry and Agriculture are requesting that the amount of fraud judged as a felony be raised to $500,000, up from that $300,000 number, because they believe the $300,000 tax fraud limit is way too strict and punitive. Are you getting this? Look, what do you think happens in the States if anyone gets convicted or even accused of tax fraud? Even if it's just $5,000 or $10,000, you don't want to be in that position. Because the first thing the IRS does is lock up all your bank accounts. Of course, if you're huge, like GE, a pharmaceutical company, big bank or brokerage firm, you just pay the fine and nothing happens. You know, too big to jail and all that. But if you're a little guy, look out. All right, speaking of taxes, remember a couple of shows ago I mentioned that you could leave the U.S., live in a foreign country, get your residency and all that, and earn that gigantic $105,000 a year foreign earned income tax exemption from the U.S. feds. You could be sitting in Panama or Honduras or Guatemala or wherever, run a business totally legal on the books, and make up to $105,000 in profit a year and pay no U.S. federal taxes on it at all. Part of the reasoning there is that you'll have to pay taxes in the Latin country that you're earning it in. And as it turns out, in most Latin countries, you'll pay no more than 5 to 10% tax on that. And even that's usually fudged quite a bit, if you know what I mean. And the real crazy thing is, say you have a business in Honduras, you make $100,000 profit. Most of your customers, let's say, are in Europe or South America, which is quite possible if you're a gringo doing business internationally, let's say. Then that means the money's coming into your Honduran bank account, not from Honduran citizens or clients, but the money's coming in from outside Honduras. So you pay no taxes. Say what? First off, you won't pay U.S. federal taxes because you get that $105,000 a year exemption because you're in a foreign country earning money outside the U.S. And you won't pay Honduran taxes either because they only tax you on the money that's earned from within the country. So, for example, if all your clients are in Europe, South America, Asia, or even next door in Belize, you're tax exempt in Honduras. Confused yet? Well, just know it's all in your favor. So here's how it works. Except in a few Latin countries, like, for example, Colombia and Brazil, if you're a resident with a business there, you don't pay any taxes on income generated outside of the country. However, if all your income is coming from within the country, you'll have to report that and pay taxes. Which, by the way, is why so many expat gringos have internet businesses because, well, since a good majority of those are operated out of people's homes and home offices, most just fly under the radar and are not reported as businesses at all. Hey, that's something we talk a great deal about at the Expat Insider Seminars. As Boris Badenov would say, very interesting. Again, in no way do we encourage anyone to break the law. We just talk about what astute expats and gringos in businesses do down here in Latin America. And, better yet, what they don't do. All right, so as mentioned a few shows back, if you're living in a foreign country, you've got residency, and you qualify for that big $105,000 foreign earned income tax exemption, there's a kicker few people know about, but here it is. Some U.S. states will still tax you, even though the feds won't. It's a catch-22 some gringos and expats get caught up in when it's too late. Which brings me to this email that just came in. He says, Johnny, dude, you saved our asses with that episode on the foreign taxation by U.S. states. You know, we were all set to move from California directly to Guatemala, but then did some research, and it appears the Tax Franchise Board in California has this totally subjective list of criteria they consider when they classify you as a resident for tax purposes. And they tax you then while living abroad. Stupid crap, I know. You could hardly believe it. Like, for example, on the state tax form, they'll ask a question like, do you have family or friends living in California? Do you pay dues to any professional organizations in California? And if you check any of those boxes, you lose. So, we've got a change of plans. We're going to relocate to Florida first to establish residency in a non-state tax jurisdiction. That's Florida. And that'll delay our move to Central America. But it means we'll be attending your January seminar since we've got our paperwork started already and we're set to go. All right, thanks for that. It comes from Mr. R. See you at the seminar. Anyway, he brings up something very important. I know it hardly makes sense, but what does make sense with government? The feds give you a huge $105,000 foreign earned income tax exemption if you're living outside the country. Meanwhile, 90% of states will keep taxing you on foreign earned income forever. So you have to plan your moves strategically. That is, if you plan on having a legit business in Latin America or wherever. Of course, if you're retired, getting a pension or Social Security, it won't make that much difference to you. So one answer is, like Mr. Ira, you could go to a U.S. state that has no tax, like Florida, establish residency there, and all that might take is renting an apartment and getting utilities hooked up. And, of course, cutting all ties to the high-tax state like California or New York that you just left. Enough said about that. All right, in illegal immigration news, all Latin American countries are getting pissed off at the Venezuelans that have been pouring in. Most of them end up being illegals, even though the majority of them entered other Latin countries on legal 90-day tourist visas. They've overstayed, and now the majority are illegal. Sound familiar? Well, they're calling it the biggest mass migration in the history of Latin America. Even worse than the problem the U.S. has with illegals pouring in from Mexico and Central America. And like I said, everywhere you turn, you see Venezuelanos. And the local populations are getting pretty pissed off about that. For example, if you're in Peru, the locals will admit the Venezuelans are highly educated, more educated than they are. Although most of them arrive with just the clothes on their backs and they need a job fast. So what you get, as one Peruvian businessman told me, a ton of Venezuelanos with licenciaturas working at places like Wendy's, McDonald's, and Starbucks. Oh, and a licenciatura is a person with a college degree. Wait a minute. People with bachelor's degrees working at Starbucks, McDonald's, and Wendy's? Oh, that sounds familiar too, doesn't it? Well, how about this for the latest on the illegal Venezuelan front? Turns out, places like Paraguay and Ecuador are offering free bus rides to Venezuelans to the borders of neighboring countries. And even if they can't get across legally through checkpoints, there are a million other ways to get across. Now think about that for a second. That would be like Mexico giving free bus rides to anyone who wants to go to the Tex-Mex border. And when they get there, saying, everyone out, you're on your own. Oh, and here's something you didn't know. Speaking of the plight of Venezuelans, there's a big tie-in here these days with the Latin American mating, dating, and Cupid thing. Recently, I got a slew of emails from gringos and expats who signed up at those Latin Cupid mating and dating sites, and they said suddenly they got a slew of contacts from Venezuelan ladies. Like one gringo said, desperate measures for desperate times. They're looking to get saved by anyone that can throw them a lifeline. In fact, one gringo lonely heart guy on that site told me his Venezuelan lady contacts outnumber the rest of his Latin American lady contacts, something like 8-1. In fact, he said you could be a one-armed, booger-eating, couch potato slob, and you'll still get bombarded with chat requests from all kinds of Venezuelan ladies. They just want out in the worst way. The only thing is, like a number of gringos have said, there's this huge logistics problem. You see, you can't send money to them because Western Union and all the usual remisa routes are closed off. And as a gringo, you can't get in unless you've got a family or business connection. The whole thing's pretty futile unless you speak Spanish. Then you might be able to go down to Colombia and work it out, because there's always a way for Venezuelans to sneak in and out of Colombia. All right, since we're talking about borders and border crossings, you have to hear this. It starts with an email. Mark says, a question, Johnny. What are the chances that I'm going to get thoroughly searched if I come down to your Expat Insider Seminar? Well, Mark, as you probably know, or maybe you don't, at most international airports, after you've collected your luggage and you're ready to hand in your customs form, there's a red line or a green line you have to pass through on your way out. And depending on the mood of the lard-ass custom guy you're dealing with, he'll shove you in one line or the other. So if you look like a regular old goofy American tourist with the Hawaiian shirt and the shorts, you'll probably get the green line and no one will mess with you. However, if you get the red line, they'll shunt you over to the side and you'll have to open up your suitcases and they'll pick through your underwear, your psychotropic meds, and your butt plugs and such. And oddly enough, of all the traveling I've done, I've never been shunted into the red line. I guess the custom guys in TSA pick up on a kind of a vibe. No, and it's not the nervous, scared, jittery kind of look. Everybody's got that these days. So anyway, you got the red and the green line when you're leaving an airport. Now, when you walk into an airport to take a flight, after you've checked in, got your boarding pass and such, and handed over any luggage that's going to be stowed, then anything you've got on you is certainly going to go through the scanner, and you'll have to take shoes and belt off and empty your pockets and such. But isn't it funny, and what's your take on this? When you fly out of an airport that's not on the gringo tourist trail, they don't make you take off your shoes. And they also let you bring food items and bottled water into the secure area of the airport. They'll never let you do that in first world airports. Though it's more likely they do that because they want you to buy your water at the airport at $5 a bottle. So you're talking about TSA light, sometimes very light, when you're off the tourist trail. Of course, that's understandable. Latin America's not quite on the A list for terrorist targeting, you know. Hell, it's not even on the C list. But man, are there some evil things happening up at first world airports. Listen to this. Talk about shapes of Big Brother things to come. If you're traveling to New Zealand, the article says, you should be aware of the Customs and Excise Act of 2018. It just went into effect at the beginning of October 2018. New Zealand customs and border agents can now demand passwords for any electronic devices you bring in the country. They can then download the entire contents of your phone, laptop, whatever, and search through it for evidence of anything they think might possibly be a crime. Then it says border and TSA agents could always search your phones and laptops at the border. But now they can fine you $5,000 for refusing to hand over your passwords, codes, and or encryption keys to your devices. And it says, even worse, New Zealand's Customs and Border Control website explains it like this. Here's what it says. Making an arrest without a warrant can now be done with no limitations or time frames. You officially have no rights when you're at the New Zealand border. And now they can officially arrest you without a court order and hold you for as long as they like. And then it says the United Kingdom, USA, Australia, and Canada, along with New Zealand, have signed a treaty known as the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. They've all agreed to share secrets from their spy agencies with one another, including all biometric data collected at airports. Then it says New Zealand's not the only government with a Big Brother state on steroids. Since 9/11, the U.S. has been searching travelers' electronics at the border, too, though they kept the practice on a smaller scale until now. Then it says, in 2015, the U.S. Customs Border Protection searched the electronic devices of 8,500 airline passengers. In 2016, it escalated to about 20,000 searches. By 2017, U.S. Customs agents searched the phones, laptops, and devices of 30,200 travelers. And they did it with no warrants or probable cause. Of course, you could refuse to offer up your passwords, but you'll miss more than your flight. Then it says in January of 2018, U.S. Customs and Border Control sent out new guidelines on phone and laptop searches. The guidelines are as follows. They can now search anyone's electronic devices without cause or suspicion. Moreover, it says, at U.S. borders and airports, passengers are obligated to turn over the devices, as well as any and all passwords requested. If you refuse, agents can and will seize your devices permanently. All of that is now considered a basic search protocol. No suspicion is needed. Then it says, to add insult to injury, the January U.S. Border Control Guidelines state, Border Patrol agents will protect the rights of individuals against unreasonable search and seizure and ensure privacy protection while accomplishing their enforcement missions.
Oh, yeah.
Then it says, talk about taking another page from George Orwell. He called it doublespeak, remember? As you just heard, they want us to believe two contradictory ideas at the same time. So, they're saying, to protect the innocent, everyone has to be treated like a criminal. Meanwhile, did you know that in 2014, over 25,000 Department of Homeland Security employees had their personal details and biometric data stolen from a database managed by a contractor whose job is to perform background checks? What a bunch of shit-for-brain pusballs. And you know I mean that in the most kindest Christian sort of way. All right, so that's reason 4,276 why you have to make that move, get the plan B going, and get the hell out of Dodge. And you know, if you want to get a 2 to 5 year head start on that plan B, Come on down to my January 2019 Expat Insider Seminar. We'll be doing two countries this time. The best of Guatemala and El Salvador. Way off the Gringo Tourist Trail, partly on the Altiplano and partly at the beach. So check out the information and sign-up sheet at the newexpat.com website. That's all one word. Oh, and if you plan on coming down as a single and you want to save a couple hundred bucks, I can hook you up with a same-sex roommate. Hey, nothing wrong with that. If you pair up, you're going double occupancy. That saves us hotel room money, and I can pass the savings directly on to you. You know, the price of the seminar includes 7 nights in very nice first world hotels. And for this seminar, early bird discounts will be in effect till December 1st. And as usual, repeat offenders get a $1,000 discount. Which reminds me, for all you naysayers and doubters out there who are thinking, geez, I wonder, is Johnny's seminar really worth it? Can't I just go down and kind of explore on my own, figure a lot of this stuff out myself? Well, the proof is in the pudding, as they say. In this case, the dozens and dozens of repeat offenders I've had come to my seminars are the proof of the pudding. Why in the world would attendees come back 2 and 3 times to repeat the seminar unless it didn't have tremendous value for them? There's no better testimonial or proof than that. All right, let's take a sharp turn here and talk about that real estate bubble that just keeps inflating in practically all the medium and large size Latin American cities. Now, as some of you know, for the last dozen shows or so, I've been broadcasting on the road. And I've been checking out the real estate market in at least 10 medium and large Latin cities, including San Juan, Puerto Rico. By the way, it's been over a year now since that hurricane hit Puerto Rico, and still 25% of the country does not have 24/7 power. And that's a U.S. protectorate, man. Which begs the question, when the next big natural disaster hits you up north, wherever you are, who are you going to call? 911? FEMA? Ghostbusters? Well, chances are your phone won't connect, so you'll be on your own. Anyway, for the last few months, I've been checking out that real estate bubble throughout Latin America. And man, there's still tremendous apartment, condo, and house building going on. Maybe you won't look at this as a problem. It's almost all on the high end, because that's where the big margin is for the developers and contractors. I mean, face it, all they have to do is sell one condo or apartment for $200,000, and they could make maybe $50,000 to $60,000 profit. Whereas if they built low-end, common man housing, they'd have to sell a number of low-income units to make that kind of return. Besides that, there's no prestige in low-income housing, and it's all about the show here in Latin America, isn't it? So for us, it's a great renter's market. And now, the desperate sellers are starting to come out of the woodwork. You've heard me say the perfect example is Guatemala City, where you could go into a brand new subdivision. You know, there's a good chance you're the first one in. They never had a single person walk through the place and view it. Of course, they're not going to tell you that. In fact, I've been told by realtors on the QT, it's become common for developers and contractors to lie in their advertising, billboards, pamphlets, and marketing campaigns. They'll say things like 90% sold or last 3 units available, where in truth, the place is only maybe 30% sold and they've got 70 units available. In many cases, after 2 or 3 years, not even half of the building is sold out. That makes it a golden opportunity for renters, not to mention the desperate sellers are coming out of the woodwork. In fact, just yesterday, I went around with a realtor to check out 3 units in a fantastic residential tower. It was a 3-year-old project that wasn't sold out yet. With marble floors, real rainforest hardwood doors, granite kitchen countertops, underground parking for 2 cars, ocean views, regular elevator and service elevators too, 2-bedroom and 3-bedroom units with servants' quarters, fantastic gymnasium, saunas, jacuzzis, even the asking price for the 2 bedrooms being around $160,000 was pretty reasonable, and the 3-bedroom about $180,000. But the contractor's rep, the guy that was showing me these units, kept on hinting to me over and over. He'd say, yeah, it's $160K, but if the buyer was to have cash. Then, as I walked out, he said, it's not only negotiable. Don't be embarrassed if you want to throw a real lowball figure at him. Of course, the whole walkthrough was in Spanish, and I don't think gringo speaking English is ever going to get a realtor to throw those kinds of hints about cash. They're thinking, you know, every gringo is loaded. And man, even at $160K, these things were beautiful, and the hardware, high-end. And the size, around 1,400 square feet. Oh, and maintenance, about $150 a month, which for Latin America is a little high, but I guess in the States, it's probably low. Now, if it didn't have a pool, I'm sure it would be more like $100 a month. Oh, and speaking of maintenance costs on Latin American properties, you know, the other day I was looking at these properties that Doug Casey's group has for sale in La Cafayette in Argentina. I'm sure some of you listeners get the blurbs on that. Some of you have heard about the place. It's got vineyards, horseback riding, golf course, big lots, expensive houses. You have to have a lot of money to live there. And the maintenance costs starting at $400 a month. When I saw that, I was thinking, you know, for $400 a month, you could rent a nice little apartment or even a nice house in a gated, guarded community off the Gringo Tourist Trail in most places in Latin America. Just a little comparative food for thought there. So again, that big Latin American real estate bubble is being pumped to the limit. In fact, it simply blew my mind when I asked the realtor how many residential towers are under construction right now and will be completed within the next 2 years. We're talking about one of the big cities in Colombia. And that number, get this, 400 in various stages of construction. Plus, he said there's another 400 going through the approval process right now. In other words, they've got the land, the architectural plans, and the contractors lined up, but not a single spade of earth has been excavated yet. In other words, in this big Colombian city, in the next couple of years, there will be another 800 residential towers, all of them on the high end, in a market that's already overbuilt. And yet, maybe only 3 to 5% of the locals could ever afford to qualify for a mortgage, and none of them have the cash. You got to wonder, are these contractors and developers idiots? Doesn't anyone look a few months or years into the future? Doesn't anybody do any kind of pre-construction financial and demographic analysis? Or is it just that stupid mantra we know is wrong? Remember, build it and they will come? But, you know, as far as we're concerned, gringos and expats, it's good for us. Oh, and by the way, I was talking to the realtor who liked to switch back and forth to English because he lived up in Massachusetts for a while. His parents had dough. I asked him if he saw the movie The Big Short. You know, it was all about the 2008 big real estate bust in the States. And he said, yeah. I said, you don't see any parallels to that town here? He said, why? Should I? Though it is, he said, getting to be a harder and harder sell. You think it's like that here? Duh. Then I said, you ever wonder why McDonald's almost never fails? Because they do demographics and won't let one McDonald's encroach on another one. Then he just gave me that old deer in the headlights look.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.